Hello and welcome to the Echo Chamber podcast. My name is Tony Groves, and today we are going to the divided states of America. Speaking of someone who divides opinion everywhere, Martin, how are you keeping?
Not too bad, Tony. Just like to remind you, there's a consensus of opinion on this. The Tortoise Shack is the best independent podcast platform, and we need your support. So hand in pocket, take out some money, credit card even better, and go on to patreon.com/ and just give us every single penny you have.
No, don't mind him. We you can go in from $2.50 up to $6 or whatever you're having. There's a load of tears there. But any support and all support is very welcome. Don't mind Greedy Guts over there. He's delighted with himself. Much more importantly, we're delighted to be rejoined on the podcast by our friend in Minnesota. Which and the last time we spoke to Seamus Malkafazali, I'm butchering his name and I've butchered it again, so that's brilliant. Seamus, how are you keeping?
I'm doing well, Tony. Yeah. Thank you for having me on the program again.
No, it's great to talk to you, and we appreciate you taking time out. I know before we came on air, we were obviously discussing in broad terms what's actually going on, but I suppose the first place to start is, it's only, you know, it's, what is it, November 1st or November 3rd is D-Day?
November 3rd.
Yeah, and, you know, is there a feeling that you're in the midst of a campaign, or does it just feel like Alice falling down the rabbit hole?
I've lived through a couple presidential elections in my lifetime. It does not feel like an election cycle in any sense of the word. You see signs along houses that remind you that, Biden is running. Not really any Trump signs, but there is no door-to-door campaigning. There is no rallies that you can go to or you can watch. Everything that would be the staple of an election that you really could not escape is not present here, for obvious reasons, of course.
So, but you say for obvious reasons, and we're in what's called in Ireland level 3. You know, you can't. No pubs open, no bars, no restaurants. You have to sit outside if you get to a restaurant, and, you know, takeaway only, and no gatherings more than 6 people, Martin. And,
yeah, 6 people from one other household.
Yeah, so all of these things. And yes, the president of the United States is a super spreader. It's insane.
Oh, God. I mean, okay. So, I mean, I know. Back in Ireland, I'm no fan of Leo. I'm no fan of Michal. But I hear some of the things that my friends in Ireland are talking about. I was talking to a friend from Cork recently who was telling me that, you know, people should really, like, they should wish they were in America instead of Ireland right now. Mm. I'm just like, what? No, yeah. It's been bungled in Ireland to a pretty significant extent, but just in America, it's just on a level untold. Like, Jesus Christ. I guess for the viewers at home, for the listeners at home, who may not have followed this a bit closely, there's a new Supreme Court justice that was being appointed, and there was a congratulatory meeting outside on the Rose Garden at the White House. People very, very tightly packed together, no masks at all. And then conveniently, one person in the crowd, Hope Hicks, who was an advisor to Trump, had COVID-19. And very quickly, I think somewhere around like 17 people, including U.S. senators, close confidants of President Trump, like former New Jersey Governor Chris Christie, all of these people got COVID, including Trump, who we later found out had been diagnosed with COVID, and then went to Minnesota, then held a rally somewhere else, and was seen hugging people and shaking hands with people after he had been diagnosed with COVID. And then when it became too big to ignore, had to go to the hospital. And was released a couple days ago, but to what extent he's dealing with it, that's a bit complicated.
That's stunning, isn't it? When you think about the most controversial thing President Obama did was wear a tan suit.
Jesus. The main thing that bothers me here is that, I mean, when you have a wannabe authoritarian, typically they spout bullshit, but they have the good sense not to believe their own bullshit. There's a thing that they tell people and there's a thing they believe for themselves. The Trump administration is incredible because they're spouting things that they know are bullshit, but then they also believe that same bullshit about COVID-19 not being a big deal, not being that contagious. You know, you can walk around doing whatever you want, and then, you know, surprise, surprise, all of them get it at the exact same time. You know, convenient how that works. Just madness.
Has he damaged his chances of real? I mean, is he still really in with a shout in this? I mean, should people be worried that Trump is on his way back for another term? Or is the clown show now just the complete clown show?
I mean, oh, Jesus. It's like in any other election, and I do mean in any other election cycle, Biden would run away with it. I fully believe that. The polls for him right now have never been better. They far exceed what Hillary had, and the polls for Hillary were famously pretty wrong. But now the main concern is that, right now you can't go to an in-person polling location the same way that you could. The normal way of voting has been upended. And so millions of people are now forced to send in absentee ballots. And the issue is that the Trump administration has made a point of trying to sabotage absentee ballots as much as they can to make sure that they don't go in, because at least a plurality of people sending in absentee ballots are Democratic voters. And if you can get those votes out of the way, then you can coast the re-election without the majority of the country really being behind you.
It's voter manipulation is what it is. When you like, I mean, it's, let's be honest, this has been since Trump took power. I recall a lot of people saying, you know, and it's the same myth we hear often when it comes to wannabe authoritarians, that the office will somehow moderate them. They'll become the title more so than the person. But they straight away said about trying to, you know, move electoral districts, gerrymander sort of electoral lines, which were to disadvantage mostly people of color, working class communities, and people who are less likely to vote for them anyway. And now we see it on the, as you said, by the vote by mail and the absentee ballots. And yet, you know, we've seen, I think it was Trump's last two votes himself in presidential elections. He voted by mail himself. And now he's saying this is the greatest scam of all time. I suppose taking the polls aside and saying, OK, Biden is ahead. The media, first of all, loves a race, and they don't have one at the moment because the polls aren't giving it to them. But they are trying to keep saying, well, don't count him out. But even if he loses, he lost the last time by over 3 million votes, and he still won because of the electoral college system. There is a chance in this, surely, Seamus, that he can hold on to enough states to at least muddy the waters if it's close enough to make things difficult for any sort of transfer of power, considering he's now stacking the Supreme Court? Or am I being too conspiratorial?
No. You're completely right. He's been talking about using the Supreme Court, specifically talking about the importance of appointing a judge now, because there will be an inevitable snafu when the election results come in. I mean, there was an electoral map shown around a little bit ago. I wish I remember which states were switched up, but There is a good chance that, God forbid, there's an electoral tie-up, because there are enough electoral votes where you could feasibly have a complete tie. And if that's the case, it goes to the House of Representatives, and that's a madhouse in of itself. But I think Trump fully intends, regardless of how I mean, if there's a large electoral victory for Biden, there's a large popular vote victory for Biden, Trump can easily say Democratic governors are funneling tens of thousands of millions of Democratic fake ballots that caused this horrible victory. How could the victory be so Biden's victory be so large? If Trump wins by a hair, he can say that I would have won more if there hadn't been so many fake ballots sent in. If he loses by a hair, I mean, it's just the same thing. He has an excuse that he can use for every single one, and it works within the mythos that he's created of himself, of someone who is being persecuted by the deep secret government forces, even though he himself is the head of the entire government. I mean, he's able to work within, you know, what he wants to.
Can you settle one thing first, though? And we're having this debate in Ireland at the moment. We have almost weekly rallies by a small group of far-right agitators. Now that the streets are pretty empty, they're going out. And they are. It is a concern. It's a concern here. And we have counter-protesters and, you know, the demonstrators are going out. But we don't know if it's true. But apparently they all take their instruction from the head of Antifa, who's Joe Biden. Is this true?
Ooh, well, you know, I'm going to have to check my sources on that one, but I don't know. It's dubious. It's real dubious.
It must be insane to think, like, traditionally, they would campaign on the left and then move immediately to the center. But I would, like, in our terms, we would not look upon Joe Biden as anywhere near the left. We would look at him as representative of the center right, almost, even if he maybe has a progressive mandate. What do you think of his actual offering? Is America just wants Uncle Joe, or are they just to get rid of the stain of Trumpism?
Yeah, people want a return to what is quantified as normalcy. But the issue is that that's really unquantifiable. They see Trump as an aberration, as this kind of stain on American democracy that is completely alien to anything that came before it. But of course, that isn't true. This has been the lead up of, you know, decades and decades and decades of Republican fear mongering. I mean, you saw it in the Democratic primaries when Joe Biden was running as a candidate in a field of somewhere around, I think, like 16 at the time. He was just doing awfully in Iowa and New Hampshire, really pathetically, to the point where I wish that I knew for sure that this was true. But there was an anecdote from a reporter who overheard John Kerry, who was the candidate in 2004. He was in a hotel lobby in Iowa calling someone drunk, wondering if he should jump into the race in order to save, like, the liberal plan. It was just Armageddon. But Sanders was doing so well and was really quite running away with it in a lot of respects. I mean, he's the first person to win the popular vote in Iowa, New Hampshire, and Nevada ever. So there was an understanding that if we could get all the centrist candidates behind the most popular one, the most, not necessarily popular in terms of policy, but in terms of name recognition, if we could get everybody behind that, then we can defeat this actually left-wing candidate. People don't care much about Joe Biden's policy positions. They implant on him whatever they want. What they know is that he was Obama's vice president, and Obama represented a time when things, at least to them, felt semi-normal. They weren't hate reading social media. There wasn't this malaise over everything that plagued everything. I mean, it's not like even Biden presents something that is even more progressive than Hillary Clinton was 4 years ago. Hillary Clinton, for example, she proposed lowering the Medicare entrance age to 55. But Biden, his main progressive platform is that he's willing to lower it to 60. I mean, that's 5 years older than Hillary did, and that was 4 years ago. I mean, it's just a placeholder.
Well, when you think of, we talk about things like, say, the AOC, in your own state, Ilhan Omar, you know, the progressive, more left, more liberal, more, I'm going to use that word radical, and we wouldn't think of them as radical on this podcast. We would just think of them as actual sensible alternatives. But the ideas that they put forward, and then you hear Kamala Harris say Joe Biden won't ban fracking. It doesn't strike me as a guy who's actually, yeah, it does strike me that, as you said, it's more a referendum on Trump than it is anything to do with who's actually running against him.
Yeah. I mean, Biden has phrased this in his own terms, basically, that he is a transition candidate. Mm-hmm. In 2020, he's there to get rid of Trump, to restore what at least was status quo before, and then make way for a future Democratic candidate. The issue is that, I mean, a 4-year transition period to getting back to how the Democratic race was before in like maybe 2012. I mean, that doesn't sound very enticing, especially at such a dire and extremely important point. And we're talking about climate change reaching a tipping point. We're talking about the economy being in complete shambles. Just all these different factors that you can't really wait 4 years to deal with in a proper way when everything is normal again, because there's no guarantee if things are going to be normal again after that point. Yeah. I mean, what happens if someone after Trump, like, I don't know how familiar these politicians' names are in Ireland, but Tom Cotton, for example, if you were to run, Josh Hawley, if you were to run,
Trumpism isn't Trumpism at all. He was just, he's a symptom. He's not just the, you know, he is albeit an ugly, manifestation of it, but he's not, I love the phrase. What is it? The mango Mussolini. I'm reminded.
Yeah,
there's so many
different things.
The tangerine Idi Amin is one of my favorites. But Martin, go on.
Yeah, Seamus, can I ask a question? I don't hear it ever brought up. You know, if you're going to have an election that's going to end up so contentious, where's the army in all of this? I mean, they are a force to be reckoned with in America. I mean, they're a really powerful force.
Stand back and stand by, Martin.
Stand back and stand by for whom?
That was the Proud Boys, but nonetheless, but
what is the story with the army? Are they bound to hold with whoever has the most votes? Are they bound to hold with Trump if he says that it was rigged? I mean, who are they bound to hold with?
I don't think that there is going to be. I've heard rumors that there's going to be a civil war, and that Trump is going to hold on to power as much as he can. But I don't think that Trump has the stamina really to hold fast against a situation that would require the army to step in and restore some sort of power. What Trump benefits from is something that can be done, I don't want to say legally, because it's incredibly just nefarious, but something that can be done through outside of the watchful eye, like through court systems, through the Supreme Court. If he can manage to suppress the votes enough that it requires the election to go in some form to the Supreme Court, or have the Supreme Court rule on something related to voting, he can hold on to power that way and not have to necessitate, tanks rolling into D.C. to enforce it. I mean, George W. Bush, most famous example, he lost the popular vote. The Republican Party operatives managed to stop a recount of the votes in Florida, which experts say would likely led to Al Gore winning Florida and then the election. And then the Supreme Court ruled in his favor. If Trump has avenues with which he can hold on to power without really endangering himself, really having to commit to anything to him personally. All he has to do is just bluster and make speeches, which is what he likes to do. And anything else other than that that he would have to do that's way too labor intensive. He has things that he can do that he doesn't need to do any of that hard stuff.
And I actually think you've hit on it really well there. And it's a phrase I keep using, and I'm probably getting fed up, and listeners are probably fed up me saying it, but the crime is what's legal. The fact that he's managing to stack it in such a way that once it's contentious, he just needs it close. He just needs it close enough that he can make it, that he can muddy the result and hopefully force it into the Supreme Court, which he has then stacked 6-3 in his favor. If I was just to ask you, though, what's your genuine sense of like his handling of the pandemic? Is it going to be a reference? Is it COVID that's going to dominate the last few weeks of this election, or is it this imported culture war that he so successfully ran against Hillary Clinton? You know, the caravans are coming, the Muslim ban, all of these awful things and racist things that he managed to mainstream. Is that true? Do you think has he had any success with his old rhetoric, or is it just COVID taking over everything?
I think the rhetoric around COVID has really taken over everything. I mean, Trump has attempted to make everything about Black Lives Matter, the George Floyd protests, all the riots. The issue is that while those are certainly effective, I won't deny that. I mean, you can turn off the TV and not have to deal with the protests with BLM if you turn off your computer. Mm. You can never escape what's going on around you. It governs every single part of your life. It affects how you walk around, how you breathe. The culture war stuff, it does have its footing in there with, I can't even believe you have to call it a debate, but with the debate with masks, all the stuff about government interference in your life with that kind of thing. This idea about restrictions on gatherings being anti-human or something like that. With those avenues, he can utilize that effective culture war aesthetic. But even then, that still factors into the larger pandemic.
And they were always going to vote for him anyway.
Of course, yeah. It's much less effective this time around simply because there are bigger issues at hand. Like, you can talk about Mexicans invading, you can talk about, Black thugs. But, you know, there are bigger fish to fry here, even within the Republican establishment. I mean, yeah.
Is it hurting him at all that the death rate in America, is that doing him any damage at all?
I mean, his response to the pandemic in general has hurt his polls somewhat. The issue is that he's got a pretty high ceiling, because there are always people that will love him no matter what. But in general, America's refusal to reckon with the death toll is something that astounded even me. Democratic and Republican politicians alike, they make these kind of overtures talking about all the sacrifices that you've made, all of these things that we have to do. But yet, I mean, 200,000 people are dead from this disease, and people are kind of going along as normal. There's a sense that, I mean, obviously something bad is going on, and everybody's, you know, upset and depressed, but there's no sense of mourning. There's no sense of immediate action. We're still very much set into these kind of petty fights about wearing a mask inside of a grocery store. There hasn't been enough of a national focus on it, enough to hurt Trump significantly enough that his base would abandon him in such a way that it would tank his polls, unfortunately.
Just, I suppose, the last thing for me for now is we're 3 weeks out. We're heading into it, and the world is looking on. And the last few years, if we have any lessons that I'm taking away from it, is that the democratic structures and the checks and balances and the limits on power that we all, you know, America as the world leader, all of those they weren't as effective as we thought at all. And it really has been eroded its place in its standing in the world and its actual and its pillars of democracy. How do you am I wrong to make that judgment?
No, I would say the only thing is that America's chickens have very much come home to roost in this respect. I mean, I don't need to tell you, but the United States has been involved in so many vote riggings, coup d'etats, complete overthrowings of democratic political systems all over the world for much of its history. And is it really any wonder at this point that those same tactics that were being used, those same feelings about needing to forcibly implement your ideology, that those somehow eventually, you know, came back to haunt you? I'm surprised it took this long for it to happen, but this kind of thing was inevitable. I mean, when you're just swinging around this giant baseball bat, eventually it's going to hit you in the face.
It's a very good point, Seamus, but I think too that the effect of Trump beyond America has hurt a lot of countries. I mean, it's hurting us here. We're importing the same kind of nonsense. The UK has swallowed it hook, line, and sinker. In fact, pretty much anybody who reads an English newspaper, any country that has an English newspaper has gone down that kind of conspiratorial tinfoil hat route where a pandemic is concerned. His damage outside of America may end up to be more than his damage with inside America.
Oh yeah. I mean, I don't know how closely you've been following this, but there were protests in Germany, of all places, for QAnon.
Yeah.
I mean, the Trump conspiracy theory about the pedophile cabals. I mean, it's the specific fascism and this kind of bizarre conservatism has always found its place, to be obviously in Europe, but this specific brand of just inane fascism, authoritarianism, wannabe authoritarianism.
It's insane.
I think it'll.
But QAnon, like I don't want to give it much oxygen, but like anybody who, you know, spends more than 2 or 3 minutes on it can see all the holes in these things, and yet people hold to it. And you're right, there was hundreds of people out in the streets of Germany flashing their Q signs and they're giving it. And it's just, I don't know where we go with this, but I do think there is a big concern that, and we've seen it in the police force in the US where they've been flashing Q signs, and we've seen all of these, you know, you don't need to talk about the Proud Boys and these militias that are self-styled advocates. But it's also in your politics now where I think you've two candidates who are Trump endorsed, who are, who have on the record, you know, whether it's Facebook posts or whatever, if they've spoken in favor of and believe in QAnon. I sound exasperated. I don't even know if I have a question other than how do we get through to people?
I mean, Americentrism in culture has some of its benefits. I mean, you get a lot of great movies. But the back end of that is that all of the brain worms that come out of America also are coming into Ireland, they're coming into the UK, they're coming into even non-Anglophone countries like Germany. I mean, QAnon has absolutely no relevance to the German political system at all. It's entirely about the United States, but it's so prevalent in internet circles, which are already self-dominated by Anglophone users, that it spreads into these countries. And I mean, unless you are an anarcho-primitivist, like Mark, you're talking about just... if you're like Martin and you think that deleting the internet entirely is like a good idea, that is the only way that I think you could feasibly do it.
I don't think you could delete it, Seamus. I think it has to be electromagnetic shock, low level.
Oh, yeah. That's not about it.
But it's actually quite funny in the context of to bring the conversation almost full circle. We had Professor Anthony Staines on. He's a the professor of virology in DCU, and he was talking about the fact that we're talking about our next lockdown. They said we'll call it a circuit breaker. We'll make a short, sharp, shut everything down. And he said you can't just shut it down because the virus isn't a light bulb. He said the virus is a rumor, and the only way to tackle a rumor is to pursue it with truth and pursue it relentlessly and get the truth ahead of the rumor, because the rumor spreads a lot faster. And I thought, you know, when you see these conspiracy theories now, they're so far out ahead of you know, like we're having this conversation here, but there are a multiple of people on 19 Chan and 24 Chan or whatever they're calling themselves these days, and we're all having to chase it. I want to bring it. I don't want to delay you much more, but do you think we're going to see any more debates, or is this going to just be played out by? And I have to say that the imagery of him standing on the balcony, it's very, very, very much the Mango Mussolini imagery, you know. Is this where we're going now with this strong man for the last couple of weeks, and everything else is just hold tight and everybody hope that America doesn't implode?
Oh God. I mean, a good example of what this, like the best example of what Trump is that there was a story, I can't remember what outlet it was in, but it was a story from one of his confidants that was his original plan. What he ended up doing was that after he left Walter Reed Hospital, Trump stood outside of the White House at night, valiantly took off his mask and showed that he was breathing, and oh my God, incredible, he beat the disease. But then, like, you can see on the video that he's having a lot of trouble breathing when he takes off the mask. Like, he's clearly in pain. And in the story, his original plan was that he was going to walk up to the White House appearing very frail, and then when the cameras are, you know, they're rolling or they're waiting for him to do something, he opens up his shirt and there's a Superman shirt behind it.
Willy Wonka.
It's real. Like, I'm not joking at all. It's like the Willy Wonka with Gene Wilder. It's complete nonsense. this is what he is. He relies entirely on stunt and spectacle. And when he is forced to make a big decision, he has incredibly stupid ideas. What he benefits from is letting other people do the work for him. I mean, as much as I've talked about how there's this threat of voter suppression, there's a very, very good chance that the election could be stolen just by how many ballots are rejected. There is also a very good chance that Biden will win this simply because the polls are just so much in favor of him. Mm-hmm. And there are just so many absentee ballots that he could potentially win it over that way. I think regardless of election result, there is going to be just turmoil, not just in these few weeks, but after the election, because of course there's going to be a huge debate over it. Even if Trump wins, he'll likely deny the results because he did that last time.
Yeah.
But after, I think the majority chance, though I don't want to say for sure, I think the majority chance is that he will leave office screaming and kicking, but he'll leave office and he'll make a fuss about it on Fox for the next 20 some years until he keels over. I don't think that he himself will stay in office past his term. But of course, the after effects of what he's created, the final eroding of democratic norms in the United States, that's going to stay forever.
I actually think he's going to be happy to walk away from it.
Yeah, I also think that to a certain extent. He likes talking. He likes talking about how in danger he is, how he's punished, how he's persecuted. And what better avenue to talk about persecution than being forced out of office because he lost an election that you claim is rigged? That is the ultimate meal ticket for him. That's all he will ever want to talk about.
And he needs
to make, doing that more than being president.
And he needs to make money. He actually knew. Yeah,
he can make money.
We've gone 45 minutes. We haven't even mentioned the fact that he's broke. You know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. $750. The rent that I pay on this apartment, that's more money than this man paid in income taxes.
Well, like, I would just say, Martin doesn't like to say this, but we actually give our Patreon money too, Donald, because he's very badly off. Like, he's worse off than this, our poor little podcast. Seamus, it's an absolute pleasure to catch up with you. I hope that we will see the result. We'll touch base with you now in the next short while, fingers crossed. If you'll speak with us again, it'd be great. I just hope you are staying safe and well. I know you're in the middle of the pandemic is still raging. The second wave, America never really left its first wave. It just continued on in. And I hope you're staying safe and minding yourself.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me on, guys. I'll be able to come on again.
Not at all. Listen, folks, again, I know we're making light of it. It is patreon.com/tortoiseshack. It actually really, really helps. Talk to you all soon. Take care. Bye-bye.
Tony and Martin, Martin and Tony, speaking to interesting people only. It's the Echo Chamber Podcast. Subscribe now on Patreon.